So thank you everyone for taking the time today. I guess we should go through what questions we want to talk about. Like there's so many parts to the Thacker Pass Pehima campaign that I don't want to ask you to cover too much material, but mostly with your last press release, it was covering how you're defending yourselves against this slap suit, right? I don't know what all you want to bring into this.
Well, I'll just say that I'm going to defer to Paul and BC mostly. I'm happy to answer questions, but just because I'm very tired and also I want to make sure other people's voices are getting heard well.
Right.
But I also just wanted to say too for BC and Paul, I don't know if you know Helen, but she lives up in northern Idaho and has been involved in land defense work for a long time. I became aware of her work when you may have seen this years ago. There was a big campaign to stop tar sands, they called them megalodes, going through that region, northern Idaho, western Montana, and a bunch of folks went out there and were like blockading essentially these like XXL semi trucks with like enormous machinery on them headed up to Alberta to go process, tar sands oil. So it was like really important components for that. And I know you've been a lot involved in a lot of other work too, Helen. I don't know if you want to say anything else about yourself, but
Yeah, we just found out last spring that the tailings ponds from the facility that all those megalodes build up are actually leaking. And of course, that goes into the river and then it goes downstream to the Athabasca Chipewyan community on the outlet of the river into the lake, right where they live, and just really messes up their world. So we were fighting with everything we had. And the Nez Perce tribe also jumped in pretty hard too. And that's what caught the world's attention. And we've also fought, well, all kinds of things. There's been oil and gas, mostly gas drilling down in southern Idaho, like around the Boise area. And that has essentially forced people to sell their privately owned oil and gas for a lower price and have, rigs like right in their backyard. And there's like four wells right next to the river, right before the Payette River goes into the Snake River. So that affects everything downstream. We've been fighting oil and coal trains coming through North Idaho, where we're based. We can look right out our window. 700 feet away, is where all these fossil fuel trains head out to the West Coast. And we fought a bridge, a second bridge being built almost a mile long over just this huge lake here. It's so beautiful with mountains and this big lake and forests and everything. And then, I don't know, lots of other campaigns. Right now, we're also fighting a gas pipeline expansion. It comes in from Canada, and it's heading across three states in the Northwest down to California, and it's just more methane to ruin the climate. And the people in the Northwest are trying to transition away from fossil fuels, and it's going to be like this, the big corporations shoving whatever fossil fuels and now, lithium on us, so that we can continue an industrial civilization that many of us don't want. So anyway, that's just some of our campaigns, mostly fighting fossil fuels and trying to keep the world healthy. So thank you for letting me introduce myself. And I guess we should start out as well with everyone introducing themselves as much as you like. Would you like to start, BC?
Sure. Well, thank you for the work that it sounds like you've been doing for a very long time, and for taking interest in our situation and your time today. And I don't know, I just talking to you from my sewing space here on the Hungry Valley Indian Reservation.
All right. Thank you for sharing everything with us that you're going to share today.
Paul Cienfuegos. I live in Portland, Oregon. I've been a grassroots community organizer and workshop leader in various social movements pretty much my whole adult life. For the last almost 30 years, I've been an increasingly a leader in the community rights movement that's about dismantling corporate constitutional rights, corporate personhood, etc., and helping local communities to pass laws that they can directly enforce that strip corporations of their so-called constitutional rights and that protect community, basically ban harmful corporate activities rather than regulate them. Involved in that movement for about 28 years and led workshops all over the country for much of that time. And I'm semi-retired, although completely freaking out and heartbroken about everything that's going on at this point around the world, from Gaza to ecological collapse. So, still trying to have, I have my fingers in the dike in a couple of different places, but mostly semi-retired at this point. Yeah, I think that's good for now.
Yeah, and my
Right.
name is Max Wilbert. I am a community organizer and a writer, and I've been involved in different actions and movements to defend our planet for a long time, since I was pretty young, and have had the privilege of being on your show a couple, I think once or twice previously, Helen, and we've worked together a little bit in person, and I'm glad to be back.
All right. Thank you so much to all of you for your protection of water and defense of lands. I guess in terms of questions, the main focus of the most recent press release from Protect Pihimaha and Thacker Pass is you all defending yourselves from a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation. Would you like to share how? I guess first people need to know how the protests went at the beginning. And this was back in spring 2023, was it? When there were protests actually on the land at Pihimaha as the big equipment was starting to move in and they were, starting to tear up places that are considered sacred by many of the descendants of the indigenous folks in that area. Can you tell us how the protests went? I guess, BC, would you like to describe that situation?
Sure. So Max and Wilbert had been camping out there for quite a while. But yeah, like you said, it was when they really started tearing up the land and bulldozing and bringing in more of the heavy equipment. They knew that I had, well, I can only speak for myself, so they knew that I had had an interest and even a commitment to, their work. And so they had invited me up there for the direct action. And so we mainly just went there to reassert our care for the land and prey on it without really knowing what was going to happen. So we went just before sunrise and we just basically entered one of the work sites, which I continued to assert. It's just so crazy to me that I've been charged with trespassing on that particular sacred ancestral land by a foreign multi-billion dollar company because I wanted to protect it and pray with people there. So we got on there and we just started praying and the elders lit the sacred fire and we worked to keep it going and keep them comfortable and just trying to meet some of our basic needs. And we didn't really know it was going to happen, like if we were going to get removed right away. And we just I remember most poignantly staying the first night and kind of just using what we had to fashion like blankets to sleep and something to eat because we just basically ran in there with the clothes on our backs and prayer items.
And the protests went on for several months, from what I understand. And I probably shouldn't even be calling them protests. It's more about defense of the land and being there to honor that place against all the damage that was starting to pour into the area. About how many times were people gathered there? And there were several confrontations, I guess. Were people actually arrested? And I invite everyone to jump in with their perspective as well, too. Thank you.
Yeah, Max, I maybe that's you. I don't really have the timeline like readily memorized.
Yeah, well, the camp at that time, so by this time, this is spring of 2023, the movement to oppose the mine really began in early 2021, right as Trump, or right as Biden was getting inaugurated and Trump was leaving office. So there had been a protest camp previously on the land for 10 months. There was another protest camp, during the last couple months of that. And that those camps had been shut down by fines from the federal government against myself and other people. And this this these prayer actions, which maybe Paul can speak more to that in a second. These prayer actions were really instigated when the construction began full scale on the ground, when they started bulldozing the land and destroying this, this really important place. People were out there, over the first couple days that we were there. There were workers trying to get through, trucks. Anyone who wasn't part of the mine was allowed to go through, but mining activity wasn't allowed to pass through that road. And myself and some other people were forced away pretty early on, because the company filed an injunction against us, which sort of ratcheted up the legal penalties very quickly for us being present there. But other folks continued to hold down that camp. And to pray at the site and oppose the mining activity for I think about a month. And maybe Paul, you can add a little more about your experience or your perspective on the prayer nature of the action out there. Anything else?
There were, I don't remember the exact dates. I'm sure Max does, but we went out on a for just a day visit where we didn't try to camp out, and went on to the mine action site for a handful of hours, and just occupied the space. I guess we could say that we blocked a little bit of work. We had conversations with the men who were in the security booth at the entrance gate. It was fairly uneventful. There were nobody came to try to arrest us that day. And I don't know whether it was weeks or months later, Max, that we came back with TP and a larger group and intention to camp. Was that weeks or months between
I think a
those two?
couple weeks later.
Weeks later. I mean, BC and Max were much more local. I was coming from Portland every time. And I was there. We were there for just a night or two, and the sheriff, from a Humboldt County sheriff in Nevada came up repeatedly the first day to tell us, or maybe it was the second day. I don't actually don't have detailed memory anymore of exactly what happened chronologically, but he came up repeatedly to say that he really didn't want to arrest anybody, and he wanted us to just know that we needed to get off the property. We were blockading trucks coming in. I was not physically blockading, but many others were, on what was a county road that accessed other public sites as well. So the company didn't have the authority to tell us to get off the county road, even though we were blocking their vehicles. I'm sorry that I'm feeling kind of brain foggy today. My back went out a couple days ago, and I'm kind of struggling even to be sitting today. I'm in back pain, which is not normal for me. But as Max said, he and I were given an injunction and had to leave very quickly. by the company. The sheriff never charged us with anything. He kept saying he was going to come back and would have to arrest us, but never did. And all the while, there are elders, local native elders, in prayer in the teepee and outside of the teepee. And I was asked by the elders to play a role of liaison between those who were coming up the road in vehicles to get into the mine site, employees, delivery vehicles, etc. And so I, whenever a vehicle came up the county road, I would stand next to the road and ask them what their nature of their plans were to come up, while a group of native and non-native people stood with a banner and blocked the road behind me. And then the native grandmothers would decide whether to let them through or not, and I would let them know that, and we'd either clear the road or we wouldn't. Mostly people got turned around, and that happened for a couple days. And we were never, nobody ever tried to arrest us on the site. So Max and I were forced to leave because of an injunction, and others stayed. And ultimately, and again, BC would be able to give a lot more detail because she was still there, but the authorities finally did come, and they took down the teepee, and I think t took it took I think they are still holding it. I don't think they gave it back. And there were a number of arrests. So it was very brief. The actual physical on the ground actions were basically, when I was still there, 3 or so days total, and then a handful of days after that, I believe, before everyone was forced off the land.
Wow, thank you. BC, would you like to further describe the situation?
Yeah, it was pretty much what he said, and I was involved in blockading trucks, and it was, kind of scary because we were just waiting. They were watching us through binoculars, and we were watching them, and he didn't know if we were going to be arrested or, you see the things that happened at Standing Rock, even worse. We could have been gassed, or they could have brought dogs, or we just didn't know what to expect the whole time. Basically, I just remember a lot of like the mine employees who were very hostile. I don't know, it was weird because I thought, well, don't they understand why we're here? Like, why are they so mad? They understand we're here for a good reason and because we believe in something. But I don't know, maybe they just thought we were there to mess with their day. So they took it personally. So it was more just us being out there, knowing why we were out there, understanding the risks that we could get hurt or arrested at any moment, and just accepting that and staying united together.
All right, thank you. So the current lawsuit that all of you are facing, along with a few others, when did the mining company bring that against all of you? I mean, you were already, there was two of you, it sounds like, at least, that had injunctions against you being there, maybe more. How did this lawsuit follow up on all of that?
Yeah, it was gradually expanded. So the injunction was in place for maybe a week or a couple weeks against a smaller group of us, and then shortly after that, a full complaint. It's a civil complaint, civil lawsuit, not a criminal lawsuit, was filed against us in the Humboldt County Court. This isn't Humboldt County, California. It's Humboldt County, Northern Nevada, confusingly enough. And so that's the lawsuit that we're dealing with now. It's there are 6 defendants in our defendant group. There's one other defendant who is being represented separately from us. But the 6 of us are kind of sticking together with our legal team, and we are trying to fight off these charges. And the judge so far, actually, not very much has happened with the lawsuit thus far, despite the fact that it's been a year and a half since it was filed. These things move very, very slowly. But one thing that has happened is there were six charges originally filed against us. Those include, let's see, those include, I'm going to pull up the actual charges here right now. Tortious interference with prospective economic advantage. That basically means interfering in a contract, or in economic activity. Another count is tortious interference with contractual relations, interfering with contracts between the mining company and their subcontractors. Trespass is one of the charges, nuisance, civil conspiracy. And then the last charge, which actually got tossed out by the judge, was unjust enrichment. And basically, they were trying to argue that because we're fundraising for our legal defense and fundraising for our campaign, while these prayer actions were going on, that that was illegal, unjust enrichment. The judge tossed that one out, luckily for us. But we're hoping that, our legal team can get some of these other charges thrown out. We're hoping that, we're hoping that we'll come out of this in some sort of positive way. The mining company hasn't actually named so far what they want exactly out of this lawsuit, but it's a civil case, so it's about money in the end. They're holding, financial penalties over our heads. And it's likely hundreds of thousands of dollars, and potentially more that they will try and steal from us, just like they're stealing the lithium from the land and stealing, the future from all of us with their pollution and their destruction.
I think they said at some point they quoted $300,000 that they had lost from our couple days of being there. So presumably they're going to try to get that much money. And then don't we also pay, if we lose the lawsuit, don't we also pay the corporation's legal fees as well, Max?
Yeah, we'll have to see. I'm not
I
an
mean,
expert.
it's
Never been
pretty
sued by
scary.
my company before, so
Yeah.
we'll see how this goes. It's a new thing for all of us.
And the only
And
reason that companies can even mine in the way that they are and pay almost nothing for what they're extracting is the 1872 Mining Act, which gives the right of quote persons unquote the right to have mining leases on public land and pay virtually nothing, even though they can profit by millions or billions. And because corporations are considered persons constitutionally, they have direct access to everything people have. Which is really quite extraordinary when you think about the billions that corporations make through this 1892 law.
it seems like slap suits also serve as a distraction, if not a warning,
For sure.
against activists, actually pursuing, positively pursuing some kind of justice against all this destruction. Instead, they spend their time and efforts defending themselves from corporations saying, oh, well, you're getting in the way of us making money, And I wonder, Paul, you have a lot of understanding of rights. How do slap suits undermine rights? Just
I think you
basic
pretty,
rights like First Amendment
yeah.
and other things.
I mean, you pretty much have described it well already. I mean, basically, the nature of a slap suit is just to tie activists up in knots and force them to raise money for lawyers, etc. And a lot of states in the United States have responded with anti-slap legislation, where if activists are slapped, there's a fairly direct and not expensive way to slap back. Unfortunately, Nevada is not one of those states. So I think there is some kind of very weak something around anti-slap in Nevada. I vaguely remember hearing from one of our lawyers, but n not nothing that's useful for us. But yeah, I mean, that is the whole purpose of a slap suit is to violate activists' right of free speech and right of civil disobedience.
And that's especially important for Indigenous folks in defending their land and even
The
the place
land.
where some of their ancestors are still in terms of,
Exactly.
the previous massacres that happened there.
I mean, it's really obscene to I mean, it's one thing for me as a Portland, Oregon white guy to be told I can't go back to that property. It's a whole nother thing for, the Paiute Shoshone who are of this place and have this incredible history with this landscape to be told they're not allowed to go on their own land, and this is unceded native territory. So this is remarkably one of the areas that there is no treaty. I mean, every single treaty that the US ever signed, they broke. But this isn't even treated. This is unceded native land. So it's really remarkable on top of that that the Bureau of Land Management that claims to be its manager even has the authority on unceded native land.
So, is this an attempt to keep people off the people that have been, served notice on this slap suit? Is this an attempt to keep them off the land? Are other people jumping in on the land in their place? And what's happening in terms of the mining right now? How much destruction has already happened? Though I really don't like asking that question.
Good questions, Helen, and maybe BC can add more after this, but from what we understand, there's the mining itself hasn't begun out there, but the company's been doing all this pre-mine construction, which takes multiple years. They're bulldozing, 6,000 acres of this biodiverse sagebrush dominated landscape that's home to hun literally hundreds of species of wildlife and plants and animals, and birds and lizards and snakes and so on. They're, doing other activities like they put a pipeline in the ground for their water. They are building electrical lines and access roads and all those types of things. And there hasn't been opposition on the ground since the last people were cleared out by the sheriff in June of last year. And I think part of the reason for that is it's remote, it's challenging to get to, but you could say the exact same thing about Standing Rock. And I think a big part of the difference is that the narrative at Standing Rock was, the culmination of like decades of people working to build awareness about global warming and the harms of fossil fuels and oil and pipelines, really important work. Whereas at Thacker Pass, we haven't been building on that foundation. People have been critiquing like lithium and green energy, green technology for a
Called.
long time. But yeah, on the fringes, a few people, just a few people. It hasn't it become anything like as mainstream as the critiques of pipelines. And I know BC, you were at Standing Rock. So maybe you could speak to the big contrast there as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was kind of like everyone could see and know and respond to the potential dangers of the petroleum pipeline and what could happen, and the water right there, because we were camping right on the water. Whereas out at Thacker Pass, we didn't have a beautiful river flowing right past us for people to see that imminent danger. And with the government and a lot of people really calling electric cars green, there wasn't that knee-jerk reaction like, oh, lithium mining is bad, because they were dressing it up as electric cars, which, people, they only mostly perceive harms and benefits when it directly relates to them. So if they're thinking, oh, I can get all these miles per gallon and save a lot of money on gas, and they don't see a river, we just didn't have the support and the optics that were available in Standing Rock.
Although
Not to
this mine
yeah.
is going to be humongous, right?
It's I don't know, you the other two can correct me if I'm right or wrong about this, but my memory is it's like a mile and a half or 2 miles long, mile and a half wide, 500 feet deep. I may have the numbers wrong. Is the ultimate mine site. It's a giant open pit mine on a high desert, wilderness plateau. of old growth sagebrush. And I didn't even know there was such a thing as old growth sagebrush when I first got involved in this campaign. I thought sagebrush was sagebrush. What did I know? So, but most of the sage landscapes in the Western, wilderness and semi-wilderness areas have been either grazed or cleared for one purpose or another over many, many years. And so they're not adequate habitat for sage grouse and a lot of other species. So this is really an increasingly rare landscape ecologically. And there's an antelope herd that migrates through there twice a year that God knows what's going to happen to them because the entire plateau is going to be destroyed.
So, in terms of lawsuits against the mine, I know several tribes have already brought lawsuits, and I'm not really sure where they're at this point. I know that folks have brought a biodiversity defense lawsuit forward in the last year. What are the chances still of stopping this mine, besides also encouraging people to whoops, keep up defense on the land?
I think the isn't the biodiversity thing a claim that we're arguing in our counter loss in our counter defense of the
Exactly.
lawsuit? It's not a we're not suing on this is not a new lawsuit. Yeah.
Paul's right. The biodiversity necessity defense, excuse me, is part of our legal defense arguments that we're making in our case. It's essentially the necessity defense essentially says, if you're walking in a parking lot and it's a 100-degree day and you see a baby in a car seat with the windows up and nobody there, you legally have the right to break the window of that car and get that baby out for safety. It's saying that there are certain circumstances in which, even though you are breaking the law, what you are doing is more important than, that sort of more minor law that you're breaking. And so it should be excused by court systems, by juries, by judges. And we're making that same argument, except applying it to the biodiversity crisis. It's about 150 species a day that are being driven extinct on our planet. That's the numbers that are out there, which is just shocking and terrifying. And that doesn't account for the reality that there are many species who aren't being driven extinct, but are collapsing in terms of their population, their numbers, their diversity, their richness, the area that they can live in and inhabit. Even really common species, like I grew up in Seattle, and the American robins were in my backyard of my childhood home every day. It felt like every day, especially in the wet seasons. Eating worms and stuff. And like robin populations are not healthy and stable. There are far fewer of them than they were when I was a kid. So we're in a real biodiversity crisis, and that's part of the argument that we're making in court. But to answer the rest of your question, Helen, we have the other lawsuits against the mine are all over now. There were lawsuits brought by Well, that's not actually true. I'll get to that. There were lawsuits brought by tribes. Several tribes sued the federal government for permitting this project. Environmental groups sued. A local rancher sued. And those cases all lost in federal court. The basic reason for that is because it's legal in the United States of America for mining companies to take public land. Get a mining permit for it and then destroy it. That's more important than sacred sites. That's more important than protecting water. It's more important than all these other
Native
things.
sovereignty.
That's what the law is in this country right now. It's not right. It's not just. But it is what's the law is. There is one lawsuit that is pending right now. There's an environmental group that has said that they are going to sue the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, because speaking of species extinction, there's a rare type of snail that only lives on the side of the mountain at Thacker Pass. It's called the Kings River Perg, tiny little snail, and its only home in the world is something like 14 or 15 springs.
that are just they're not right under the mine, so they won't be directly destroyed by the mine, but they're very close. They're within a mile or so of the edge of the mine. And so the belief is, the argument that's being made by that environmental group is that the impacts of the mine in terms of air pollution, in terms of changes to the water table that could dry out those springs or cause them to run dry, all the other issues that are associated with big mining projects could are likely to cause this species to go extinct, and therefore it needs legal protection. It needs to be listed as an endangered species. So if they'll have to be a lawsuit likely to see if it does get listed as endangered. Even if it does, that probably won't stop the mine, unfortunately, but it might put certain restrictions on what they can and can't do. But we'll see. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't really know too many of the details of that case.
I think another relevant detail is that when Max and Will and others reached out early in the campaign to try to get the more conventional environmental groups that have been involved in the fossil fuel issues to support this campaign, there was rejection from almost all of them. They weren't interested because this is supposedly a green future solution mine. And we had the exact same problem when we were looking. We needed lawyers. We had two movement lawyers who were going to represent us for free, but neither was legally allowed to. They weren't licensed to practice in Nevada, so we needed a Nevada attorney. And many of us, I mean, I personally put in probably 20 or 30 hours reaching out to lawyers all over Nevada, and many others did as well. To find a lawyer who was interested in representing us, and we just kept striking out. I mean, it was really remarkable. It was almost impossible to find a lawyer anywhere in the state who would represent us. So, we're up against this, this tidal wave of green energy is the solution to all of our problems, so-called green energy.
Wow.
I think if major environmental groups had been more active, it might have, I mean, it would not have been another Standing Rock. But it would have, we would have built something bigger, I think, without doubt.
So, what do all of you see as sort of the most viable outcomes? I know, of course, you'd like to see the slap suit thrown out. And also, most importantly, the mine at Thacker Pass stopped. But, how can other people that are really concerned about the development of lithium, not just at Thacker Pass, but around the world, how can people support folks that are facing the slap suit? How can there be more people, on the ground at Thacker Pass? What are the ways forward to just stop this industrial development, especially in northern Nevada right now?
I defer to Max or BC.
It's a really good question, Helen. And this is it's kind of representative of how these companies operate, where they try and find a strategic way to to counteract or undermine the movements against them. In fact, very early on in the campaign to fight this mine, probably February of 2021, I wrote a whole article about these are the ways that mining companies and the governments who they collaborate and ally with shut down social movements. And I talked about, infiltration and surveillance, talked about lawsuits and arrests and policing and all these
You're
different
breaking
types
up,
of
Max.
techniques. And they came true. I mean, we watched that play out at Thacker Pass. Very similarly, I hope I didn't give them the playbook. yeah, I mean, how can people resist? I think that, despite the fact that we've been kind of neutralized or taken out of the game by this lawsuit, this is one fight in a much broader struggle. There's anti-mining issues all over Nevada, all over the west of this country, all over the world. And if there's not mining issues happening in your area, there's all kinds of other destruction of our planet going on. And so I really try and encourage people to get involved in struggles that are actively taking place in your own area, or to start one if there aren't any. Reach out to me, reach out to BC, reach out to Paul. Like, we'll talk to you, we'll share ideas. This work is just, it just is something that you kind of have to learn through doing. You can certainly get some advice and get some knowledge from other people, but you kind of just have to do it in the end. There's no way around that. You just have to resist. You just have to stand up. And so that's what I want to encourage people to do. Part of what the lawsuit against us says right now is that it's illegal for us to encourage other people to go to Thacker Pass and blockade or interfere in Lithium Nevada's operations. So I am not encouraging people to do that. If they were to do that of their own accord, I would probably smile and be happy about that. But these are the restrictions that we're dealing with. So yeah, do I hope that a movement emerges once again on the ground at Thacker Pass, or against other lithium mines nearby, proposed lithium mines on the Oregon side of the border, at a place called the Northern McDermitt Caldera, a company called Jindalee? Yeah, I absolutely do. And I'm hoping that we can get this lawsuit done somewhat soon, so that we can get on with our lives and get on with resisting the next projects too.
Because most of the McDermitt Caldera, which is full of lithium, is on the Oregon side of the border. And so I'm also interested as an Oregon resident in being involved in future campaigns that are happening on that side of the state line. And one other comment, which is that although, I don't feel at all hopeful about the outcome of this campaign around Thacker Pass or the ability to save it as a wild place. I do think that this campaign, even though this its scale was very small compared to a lot of direct action campaigns in the US and around the world, I think it really was the first significant campaign against lithium mining in the United States. And so it did put the lithium mining issue on the map for US activists in a way it hadn't been before. And so I think it was the beginning of a culture shift in this country, among conservation-minded people. I think, indigenous people were already fully cognizant of the crisis around lithium mining, but I think the non-native, and more conventional environmental movements are just waking up to lithium mining as being just as toxic and nasty as any other mining. So that's, if there's any kind of positive thing that has come out of it, it's that, that we have changed the conversation in the United States around lithium mining. I think that was a success already.
So, BC, what are your hopes for the future with the situation and ways that Indigenous and other folks can support the movements against other lithium mines happening nearby?
Yeah, I agree with what they said about just find out what's going on in your area or just around the world. We just watched, we have a little group chat and we share information amongst each other, about the uncontacted tribe that was, fighting against the encroachment of their life way and the land that they need to live. And that's going on everywhere, and it's really awful. It's really sad, and I don't know. I guess it would take bulldozers coming to somebody's home before it really strikes home with them. So for right now, we just have to hope that there are people out there who care. I don't know what it takes for people to care about others outside of themselves, but we need more people like that.
All right, thank you. Well, thanks everyone. Is there anything you would like to add about, how you can be supported? in your defense of yourselves and the land and the water against the slap suit, how can everyone help?
Well, money for legal fees, sadly, is one of the ways, via protectthackerpass.org. Right, Max? Is that still the best way?
Yeah, that definitely helps. We definitely want to spread the word, and thank you for having us on the show to talk about this. It's a really important issue, and we want to continue speaking out about it and educating people about these issues. So there's a lot of information and reports on the Protect Thacker Pass page, the history of the whole campaign, all the press releases we've put out over the years. If folks want to get in touch with us through that organization or reach out to us individually, I'm sure we'd love to hear from you and connect about, any other ideas or just hear words of support. It means a lot to hear from folks. We got an email, a week or two ago from a high school student down in California who just wrote to us to say, I started researching this for a school project, and he said, like, my heart just kind of broke and was so with you all reading about this. He said he wasn't emotionally invested when he started the project, but by the end of it, he was very moved by what we'd done and the whole issue. And so he just wrote to us, and that was so meaningful to get that note. And we shared it among ourselves, and it was just very touching. So for me, that's huge. I definitely want to inspire the next generation.
Yeah, I also hope that people in their daily conversations about how to go about their lives can always remember, Thacker Pass and what's been done there in terms of defense of the land, as well as, the damage that could still be happening, and add that to their calculations of how they decide to get around and live their lives. It's, can't keep tearing up land in order to do basic things for a living. So,
You have to start shrinking.
degrowth, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much to all of you. We really appreciate you sharing all your wisdom and leading this movement against another deadly form of civilization. And we're always hoping and praying for all of you, and just hoping this whole thing turns around in favor of nature and all the people that depend on it.
Thanks so
Thank you,
much, Ellen.
Ellen.
It's been a real honor to be part of the defendants group.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.